Got a favorite Kate Bush song that you just want to leave a couple of thoughts on? Well, you can call our hotline at any time, and your thoughts might be played on a future episode. That number is 1-757-349-6886. That's 1-757-349-6886. Hope to hear from you soon. Strange Phenomena now has a Patreon page. If you would like to support the show, then you can visit patreon.com/KateBushPodcast to see what wonderful rewards we're offering for your support of the show. Thank you. And now, on with the show.
It has a breakdown of all the elements. You have the heavy Fairlight drums that are sampled with the reverb. And then the kind of sampled Fairlight synthesizer. And you also have a fretless bass, which is beautiful. And I love every time she uses fretless bass in her music. But it's also kind of special because it's in a different language, which is not something that she does often. There are only a few other times. And once is a cover version of another song, a classic Gaelic song. Mm-hmm. But this is an original song that she's done in another language and has never recorded an English version of this, as far as I know.
Welcome to Strange Phenomena, music of Kate Bush. I'm Cecily Link, and this week we're going to be talking about both a B-side and an A-side called Ne t'enfuis pas, which means don't fly away. Talk about the song this week is
I'm Danny. I work at Mute Records and I am a giant Kate Bush fan.
Yes, we've had you on other episodes, of course.
Yes, of course.
So when we first started talking about Kate Bush, you had said you really liked this song, and I was super surprised because nobody talks about this song.
I know, it's wild.
So why is this one of your favorite Kate Bush songs?
It's 80s Kate Bush in a nutshell, in the best way possible. So it has a breakdown of all the elements. You have the heavy Fairlight drums that are sampled with the reverb, and then the kind of sampled Fairlight synthesizer. And you also have a fretless bass, which is beautiful, and I love every time she uses fretless bass in her music. But it's also kind of special because it's in a different language, which is not something that she does often. There are only a few other times, and once is a cover version of another song, a classic Gaelic song. Mm-hmm. But this is an original song that she's done in another language and has never recorded an English version of this, as far as I know.
No, never has.
Or maybe she has and it's hiding in a vault somewhere. It's so unique and so short and sweet and just a really cool melody. And she's singing in French and she's not singing the high pitch that everyone expects her to be in. Mm-hmm. This actually shows a lot of her lower range, which is unusual, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a really great quintessential early 80s Kate Bush song.
And I have to say, this is actually my number 3 most favorite Kate Bush song.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. So we love it.
I know, which is why I was like, oh my God, girl, we need to be talking about this song. Hell
yes. Yeah. I know. I was so excited.
And I mean, like, I'm like with you, like it's she's singing in a foreign language, which she doesn't do often other than Le Baiser d'Enfant.
Yes.
So The Infant Kiss or Nana Aaron. I know I probably pronounced that wrong, but forgive me, I'm not Gaelic. my people came over here like 300 years ago. Right. Yeah, she's singing in French, which is very unusual, and there's never been an English version of this song. Yeah, I looked to see, like, okay, has she ever sung this in English? I'm not sure that this would entirely work in English.
The translations that I've seen have been, like, similar, but they don't rhyme, and it would have to be translated in a different way. I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah, you would have to do more like what they would call an adaptation, which is where you take the basic idea of the song and then you use the melody, but then you maybe tweak the melody to work it with English. Like French is very da 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 or da 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 da, whereas English is very da 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 da, like with the way right. the rhythm works. I'm breaking out the Francophile nerdiness here.
Yeah, I also figured it would be really interesting to talk to you because you know French.
Yes, oui, je parle français.
And I do not. So it's really helpful to be speaking to someone that like actually can directly like relate to it in that way. Because I'm totally like, I don't know any French. So it's going to be really interesting to hear from you, especially because like the way that she sings, like da 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 da
da da da.
Right.
Yeah, I love that she's singing in French. I love that the production seems very simple, but it seems like there's like lots of little tricks or something in the background that are going on that. Kind of you're like, oh yeah, there's that other little noise that she puts in the song, and the lyrics especially are very mysterious, like you're never quite sure, like is this a man or is it a woman speaking, and like what it's and she hasn't really talked much about the song either. I actually did manage to find like one quote from a magazine. I know, right? Like this was actually it was somebody who listens to the show, and he messaged me on Facebook and said, hey, I'm enjoying the show. And by the way, here's a link to some old magazines about her production. And I found a quote from her that I'll read later where she actually talks about the production of this song and how she used the Fairlight on it.
Wow. That is amazing. I'm really excited
Bosco,
to hear that.
Bosco Sauce. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the lyrics are very mysterious, as you said.
Yes.
Like, they're a lot more vague, I feel like, or like, I don't want to say poetic, but I guess vague, more mysterious than her previous songs that seem very straightforward. Like, you can sort of, like, especially in the songs that are very narrative based, you know, those are pretty obviously about something. But there's a lot of metaphor, you know, and references to God, which I think is something that happens a lot more in The Dreaming and Hounds of Love, more so directly in Hounds of Love, obviously, with Running Up That Hill. But in The Dreaming with like Suspended and Gaffa, where she's starting to analyze these sort of religious themes, or rather themes of spirituality that have to do with God and like a higher power. So like the chorus, I'm reading the English translation off of Genius, so hopefully it's good or direct. But the chorus, if the great eyes of my God were not watching over me, I would steal you away, which is like so amazing and like such a great lyric. And I love the way she sings it in French too, but it's very mysterious. Like there's something watching over her and she feels scared, like this higher power. And then then also the references of a cat, like A Cat in the Night So Black. And then The White Wings. Like the dynamic between the black cat and like the imagery of like a dove or angel wings. It's very, I don't know, it's so good. Even in like the English translation is so poetic and just unusual, I think, lyrically to our other songs, because it is sort of dealing with these bigger themes and maybe is not as direct.
Yeah, because my impression of this song is that I get it. I feel like it's kind of about forbidden love in a way. You know, she maybe it's somebody, man or woman, we don't know. It's the narrator is genderless. They feel like they need to capture them and they're afraid that, oh, no, you're going to abandon me. Like either you're going to abandon me or you're going to die.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You have wings. You have the power to leave me.
Right. And you fell from the sky like an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Like they kind of came into the speaker's life, but they can also leave very easily. They can fly away. Yeah.
I'm coming like a cat through the night so black. You're waiting and I fall into your white wings. La la la. And I sink and I fly like a feather.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's somebody who's kind of, you know, they're falling in love with somebody, and that sinking and flying, I feel like that's kind of like the feeling of like when you fall in love, that you're falling and you're flying at the same time.
Yeah. And like I said, that the color imagery is so strong, the starkness, like a cat through the night so black. So obviously like a black cat, or imagining a black cat.
I'm looking around for my black cat. I think she left the room.
And then into your white wings, like it seems like an angel is like catching them, but also like you see that stark contrast of the black against white, which is so interesting as well. I'm trying to think of like, I mean, obviously Kate uses color a lot. She has Symphony in Blue, which is very kind of like that, but it's interesting to have that so directly in that first verse. And yeah, it's so beautiful, like,
and the way she sings and the way she sings it in French, like the Andrew described it once as liquid, like when we were actually over in France together, and he would listen to me speaking in French with people that just like, and then immediately turn over to him and speak in English and then back to French, and he said it sounds like liquid, and that's what it's definitely sounds like here. Like, I don't know, that's where I don't think it would work in English, because English is very like harsh Germanic, whereas French, yeah. You know, je viens comme un chat par la nuit si noire, you know, it's just, oh, c'est très beau.
It is. I mean, I think everything about the song sounds very liquid, like the fretless bass. That's something that I love about the fretless bass, is that it sounds so fluid. So like having that, and then like this sort of, she has a similar synth tone to Lord of the Reedy River, I feel like. And that song also evokes like images of water and like fluidity. So, and then also with her, the way she's singing, and she's singing very low and grounded, but also singing in French, which does sound very fluid. I have to ask, how do you think her accent is in the song?
It's actually pretty good. There's one part in the song, I can't think of where it is, where like her R is still a little bit English. I'm like totally French nerding here. Whereas the R in French, like I'm always telling my students, French is either in the nose or in the throat. And the French R is very different from English. Like, we don't think about it because it's our native language, but like the R in English is, it feels more like in the middle of your mouth.
Right.
When you're speaking, mais quand on parle français, c'est dans la gorge. But when you speak it, it's like right in your throat. It's like this kind of throaty sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I tell my students, like, you should feel like you're kind of coughing stuff up, but please don't all do it once. Because I don't want you to sound like my cat's giving me a present at midnight. But yeah, her French accent's pretty good.
I was curious to ask you, because I read, like, one YouTube comment that was like, oh, her accent is very English. And I have no sense of this because I'm used to American English and I don't know French. So it's interesting to think of an English French accent. So I figure you probably know better and could say more on that. And I do agree, like the English R, the ah, like it sits in your mouth a little bit. You know, the American R's are a little harder, but they're also like R, like it's mouth movements. And French R's do seem more like guttural a little bit. So I think that's interesting. I'm going to listen again after this and like kind of try and find that now. Yeah. Do you want to keep going through the lyrics or?
Yeah, sure. We'll keep going through the lyrics. I mean, we already kind of talked about the first verse and, you know, if the big eyes of my God were not watching me, I would steal you away. Sometimes I've seen that part is if the big eyes of the good Lord were not watching me. I've seen like bon Dieu or mon Dieu. And I can't tell the difference when I'm like listening really hard. Like she's got herself doubled at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by doubled is that she's got one vocal part that's singing the main melody. And then she's basically got another track where she's singing with herself. And a lot of singers do that to make their voices sound a little bit fuller. And sometimes what you'll do is you'll have one effect on one track. And then if you sing with yourself on a different track, and you can put a slightly different reverb or something on it to make your voice sound, so it'll sound a little bit different. But I've heard it either as mon Dieu or bon Dieu. Like she kind of doesn't really emphasize that consonant very much. So who knows what it is.
Yeah, the M and the B, they can be very similar.
Bon Dieu. Like I hear that on Dieu, and so like it could be bon or it could be mon, who knows.
You know, I wonder, I would have to really dig to try and find it. But I wonder if on one of the vinyl releases there is official lyrics. Oh, or maybe in the remasters.
Probably in the remasters it'll be there.
Yeah. I'm so excited for that.
Which, this episode's going to be coming out in like April, so it's already going to be out, but you know.
Yeah. Okay,
I can't wait to hear humming. Oh my God.
I know. I'm so excited for that. That's so unlike her to release an unreleased song that in the past. Hi, Kitty.
Speaking of a cat through the night so black, we have my cat right here. Y'all can't see, but we got my kitty cat. She's like, oh, hi, Mom.
She's very sweet.
She is very sweet. Yeah, she says, don't fly away. You have wings, the power to leave me. You fell from the sky like an angel, la la la, and I'm afraid that the sky will take you back. What's interesting is that actually in French, the word for sky and the word for heaven is the same word. So ciel is sometimes translated as sky and then sometimes as heaven. But then like if you mean heaven is in like the Christian view of heaven, then that would be paradis. So that's paradise, just blob off the E.
Oh, interesting. So again, like it's kind of relates to that theory. Or like the theme of spirituality.
Definitely.
Or angels. Yeah, interesting. I love that, the two last lines, I'm afraid the sky will take you back.
Mm-hmm.
Like going with like the great eyes of God, like watching me, like the sky may take you back. There's that risk to, you know, the love or the fear that the person will go away. but will be taken from them.
And her vibrato, like, Kate doesn't really sing with a lot of vibrato. It's not like a lot of other female singers were like, eh, like, it's all right there, you know. And on this, like, her vibrato really comes through. And I wonder if it part of it is that, oh, she's singing in French and it's not a native language. It's something she's not quite used to, so she's maybe a little bit more scared. But I've noticed on this song, and especially on the Et j'ai peur que le ciel te reprenne, that like, you really get, like, the shaking in her voice. She has a lot of vibrato on that line.
Yeah. It could be that it's, like, a lower vocal tone, you know, it's on her mm-hmm. lower range.
Yeah, and definitely, like the highest, there are no high notes in this song. Like, she stays, like, mid-range, low-range, for sure.
Yeah, the highest is, that's, like, not too high for Kate.
No.
Yeah, and she goes very low. And I don't know, maybe, you know, at least with my head voice and stuff versus my chest voice, I feel like it's easier to have a thinner, higher range when you're singing. And it's hard, at least for me, to do vibrato when I'm singing in that really high range, especially in my head voice. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that Kate probably has a higher range and probably with her chest tones. But because this is so low and, like, really on the lower end, at least in some YouTube videos I've seen of, like, her vocal range, this is always on the lower end, and it's probably because she can get that fuller sound because it's a little lower. And that's something that she does really well, is that she can do the vibrato with the really high notes, which is why they sound good and they don't sound thin, because mm-hmm. she has that range. But I think that vibrato can really come out also in the lower, you know, when you're singing low, you know,
mm-hmm.
And she does it really well, too. You know, the French could possibly help as well.
Yeah. I mean, because French is just, I mean, come on. It's a sexy sounding language, man. And then she goes back to the chorus, if the big eyes of my God or the good Lord or the good God were not watching me, I would steal you away. I'm coming like a cat through the night so black. I beg you, I beg you, I beg you, I beg you, don't fly away.
Yeah, I love the way that she sings the begging. Yeah. Je t'en prie, je t'en prie. Yeah, it's interesting because she doesn't repeat lyrics much either, I feel like, mm-mm. in her songs.
Or if she does, it maybe is, like, in a slightly unconventional way.
She kind of copy-pastes here, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's something I do with my lyric writing a lot. And it could be possibly why I relate to this song a lot too. In the English one that I'm reading, not ringing, it says, if the great eyes of my God, and you're saying the big eyes. Is there a distinction?
In French, grand, I mean, it looks like grand. And I usually tell my students, when I'm teaching them adjectives, it can also mean tall. Like, you, when you describe, oh mon Dieu, il est grand, like, oh my goodness, he's tall. But it can mean also big, like when you're talking about a grand chat, like a big cat.
Yeah.
But it can also mean grand. Like, French, depending on the context, it can mean several different things.
Interesting. Yeah, I really wish that there that we could see the original English lyrics.
What's especially curious to me about this is that obviously she wrote the music, but then there are actually two other writers credited to the lyrics on this song, which I didn't even realize until I started really digging into this song for the podcast. There are two other writers on this song, Patrick Jeannot, so J-E-A-N-E-A-U. I couldn't find anything about him online except that he apparently wrote lyrics for this song. And then a Vivian Chandler. And when I poked around, like, okay, who are these other people she wrote with? Patrick Jeannot. I found nothing else about him except that he's credited with writing the lyrics on this song. But Vivian Chandler apparently was an English-born actress who did some TV work and actually performed as an X-Wing fighter pilot in Return of the Jedi. But her footage was not used in the original, in the final cut. And she ended up marrying Kate's older brother, Jay. And they ended up, they had two sons and a daughter. And she died in 2013 in London, but worked as a photographer with Kate's brother, Jay, and even helped him on sessions with shooting pictures for Kate.
Interesting.
But she was born in England, but she is considered an English/French actress. So I'm guessing that at some point she must have spent enough time in France that she perhaps learned some French and helped out Kate on this song. Or maybe Kate had an idea for a French song and decided, hey, I'm going to try and use whatever like high school level French I remember. Or what?
Oh, man. That's such an interesting connection. You know, my friend... Oh, Zoe. You know Zoe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Zoe. Pff, hell yeah.
She has the... What's it called? Inside the Rainbow book that Jay did. And there's a part where he's talking about his girlfriend at the time. And I don't remember her name, but it might have been her, Vivian Chandler. And I'm so curious, and I want to read that part now because I'm wondering what he was saying, because I was kind of skimming over the book. But that's an interesting connection. I'm wondering if Patrick and Vivian, I'm guessing, probably did translation, but I'm not sure. I think the infant kiss, I'm not even going to try and attempt and say it in French because I'm not sure.
Un baiser d'enfant.
Yeah, you got it.
Though it must be said that a baiser, as long as you don't make that a verb, as long as you make it a noun, you're okay. It means kiss. If you make it into a verb, it means something far more vulgar, and it's way more than kissing.
Okay, wow. As far as I thought, when I looked that up, I thought they were credited on that as well, which made me think that they were translators, but I don't remember. So I don't remember if they're credited on that.
Yeah, I'm actually looking here.
Yeah, my internet's not working on my computer when Skype is on for some reason, so I can't Google it, but...
Un baiser d'enfant had French lyrics by somebody else. It was a François Caan, C-A-H-A-N, so... Different person. Again, another person who, when I looked up, like, okay, who is this dude? I didn't find anything about him except that he wrote the French lyrics for this. Just like this Patrick Jeannot.
Maybe they're pseudonyms.
Either they're pseudonyms or I'm guessing they might have been friends.
Yeah, or friends.
Who spoke French.
Her. Yeah.
And they went, hey, you know, you helped me put this into decent French. We got to credit you with this. So I think this might actually be the first co-write with somebody.
Yeah, in a Kate Bush song. Yeah, I can't think of anything, you know, obviously barring covers, but like an original Kate Bush song that has a collaborator in the lyrics or the songwriting, I think that's incredibly rare if there are any other instances, even if maybe they both helped with the lyrics in terms of translating them. And it makes me think about so in Under the Ivy, the book, I'm sorry, who's the author?
Graham Thompson.
Yes, I knew it was a Graham something. Yeah. Graham Thompson. So in that book, there's a mention of when Peter Gabriel and Kate were recording The Dreaming and Melt. Mm-hmm. They tried to collaborate on a song called Ibiza.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never released. I'm so curious to hear what that would sound like.
Me too. I know I actually talked about that on Peter Gabriel collaboration episodes with Andrew, which actually haven't come out yet, but we're pretending that we've already heard them. And I always think it would have been interesting. I think it would be interesting for them to have worked together. But since Kate is such a private person and a private songwriter that I can't imagine her like sitting in the middle of a bunch of musicians just, hey, yo, jam. Like, hey, everybody, let's do blues in the key of C, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think some people are naturally great songwriters with other people, you know, like the Lennon McCartneys of the world. And some people like Kate are just very much their own artists, not collaborators, which I get, you know, it's hard to translate that for someone else, like the way that you write songs, especially if you've only ever worked by yourself. In the 80s, the band Erasure asked her to produce for them. Mm-hmm. Which would have been amazing, because I also love Erasure. And she declined, saying like it was out of her wheelhouse or something. And it's like, well, yeah, because she knows how she wants things to sound. And collaborating is so hard, especially in production and songwriting. So yeah. I can see how maybe it didn't really get very far, Ibiza. Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush are very much their own songwriters. But I'm still so immensely curious, you know, just to even start to imagine what that might have been like. To bring it back, I think that it is very unique in that even though it's probably French translation, it's like some of the only Kate Bush songs that aren't just her credited as a songwriter.
And what I especially also find interesting about this song is that it looks like it was written during a very brief time when her record company wanted to break her into French-speaking Canada.
Yeah.
For whatever freaking reason. I mean, it's not like, oh, well, you know, of course the French shouldn't hear about Kate. But, okay, this is kind of random. What?
Yeah, a very random and specific demographic, because it was released in France and Canada, correct?
Yeah, both actually, this right? song, it's funny, it's actually had two releases. It was first released as the B-side of There Goes a Tenor and Suspended in Gaffa.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the title was completely misspelled and butchered. Ugh!
Yeah, I saw that.
I would have been like, I would have circled that with a red mark and given you half credit because I could tell what you were going for, but it's wrong. And the way it was misspelled, it doesn't mean anything. But then in July 1983, it was released as a single in France and Canada with Baiser d'enfant on the B-side. And then it got it's been released three times. It got released on a mini LP that featured several of her other songs, and only in Canada could you get this song as an extra bonus track.
Yes, I actually own that mini LP.
You do?
Twice. Yes, if I had the time, I would dig it out. I own, I think, the British or American. No, probably the American, because I don't think it was released in England. I own the American version, which is the black vinyl, which doesn't include N'en Fuis Pas. And I own the Canadian one on white vinyl that does have N'en Fuis Pas, because I wanted the song so bad. I got that vinyl to specifically rip the MP3 from it which I did. So it was also better quality than like ripping it from YouTube because there was no way to get it. I bought it for that reason. So I own that weird compilation mini LP twice. It's such a random assortment of songs. It's like Babushka, James and the Cold Gun Live, Ne T'en Fuis Pas, some other ones. It's like very obviously not Kate approved.
Sat in Your Lap and Suspended in Gaffa.
There you go.
Yeah, it's like, where did they just like go, okay, we're just going to go in blind and like pin the tail on the song or something? I mean, come on.
I guess they wanted to show range and also like an assortment of songs from Never Forever and The Dreaming, and then also randomly James and the Cold Gun, which admittedly is a great live performance, but is just like, it's so obviously just like a record company trying to make more money or, you know, release stuff in other places. You know, it's like very mm-hmm. weird. And I know that the A-side version that was released in Canada and France, that one was a remix of the original. And it does sound better, in my opinion.
I couldn't even really tell a difference except that the first version that was released as a B-side, maybe the vocals were a little bit more buried in the mix.
Yeah.
Than the other version? Yeah. Okay,
It's mostly like the vocal volume, and I think also the drums sound a little louder as well. But I have to like really listen to them clearly. I know the vocals were a big part of it. And it's good that they did bring them up because, I mean, they're great. It's a great vocal performance. So it deserves to be heard.
Indeed. Production wise, it looks like there were only three people on this song. I mean, you were mentioning the fretless bass. That was her boyfriend, Del Palmer.
Yes, classic Del.
Classic Del. He also was credited with the Lynn drum programming, so that's probably the dum cha dum dum
cha dum cha dum. Yes, I thought that was a Fairlight drum.
I thought it was too, but I'm kind of wondering if maybe there was like a mixture of the two. Maybe a little bit of the drum, the Lynn drum, and then a little bit of her doing stuff on the Fairlight. I know she is credited with the vocals and the Fairlight, and the engineer on the session was Paul Hardiman, who had worked with Kate before.
Paul Hardiman, he also did Get Out of My House and Leave It Open, is that right?
Yeah, he actually was the guy that she went to after most of the other tracks had been worked on with Nick Launay, and he was the final guy that she went to, and they finished up Get Out of My House and a number of other songs from The Dreaming.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm Googling him as well, because I...
He's okay.
I'm trying to figure out... I know that she worked with three different people, and one of them was Phil Hardiman, who she enjoyed working with, I remember.
Yep.
But I'm trying to remember the other guy's name.
Okay, there before him was Nick Launay. Then before that was Hugh Pagdom. I hope I didn't pronounce his name right. She worked with him on Sat in Your Lap. And according to Under the Ivy, they didn't get on very well because she wanted to, it sounded like she was more into messing around with the machines and didn't quite know what she was doing. and didn't understand that if you put 150 layers of something, you're not going to hear every single one. And Hugh basically said, hey, she's trying to be Peter Gabriel. And I've tried to tell her, hey, you got to like leave more space in your music. Rah, just a big mess. Don't want to do it anymore. Yeah, he was the first person that she went to. Then she went to Nick Lanay, who helped her with most of the dreaming, and then went to Paul Hardiman.
Yes, I remember Hugh Padgham.
I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Big music producer, dude.
Yes.
Music producer.
I remember from Under the Ivy, he was the one that kind of was like very frustrated working with Kate. And then, Grant Hardiman?
Paul Hardiman.
Paul Hardiman.
Paul Hardiman.
Too many names. I can't.
Oh my God!
Okay, I'm trying to find the songs that he worked on specifically.
You're looking for that, actually, speaking of from about Under the Ivy. So I guess about this time she had been getting all sorts of good press in Canada and America. And quote, this is from Under the Ivy. Building on these positive reactions and a subsequent foothold in the nursery slopes of the Billboard 200, EMI America had finally mobilized behind Bush's career, organizing the release of a 5-track mini LP in June 1983 featuring Sat in Your Lap, James and the Cold Gun, Babushka, Suspended in Gaffa, and a French vocal version of the infant kiss called Un Baiser d'Enfant. In Canada, the mini LP included an extra track, Ne t'enfuis pas, specifically aimed at the French-speaking Canadian market, and recorded and mixed alongside the new vocal for Un Baiser d'Enfant, Bush, Palmer, and Paul Hardiman in a single day at the house in Eltham, on October 16th, 1982. A personal promotional tour was planned to coincide with the release of the mini-album, but last-minute engine failure on the QE2, one of the least hackneyed of all rock star excuses, but Bush was still not a happy flyer, put paid to her trip, and in the end, she publicized it through a telephone interviews.
Interesting. Wow, hard work.
Yeah.
Promoting all that stuff. Interesting. So she recorded it after the dreaming had already been released. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. The whole time, the reason I was like trying to find out who was like the engineer, I wanted to like find the timeline. So that's actually really helpful because I wanted to know when this was recorded, like during the sessions. Now knowing that it was after, it's even more interesting because it's like even it's very much a stepping stone to Hounds of Love. So it's super interesting to think like, okay, this song, because like the infant kiss, okay, how do you say it again?
Un baiser d'enfant.
Un baiser d'enfant.
It's close enough.
Yeah, okay. The infant kiss, the French version, obviously she just had to do the vocals over, but this was an entirely new composition.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting to think of that timing and to think of that, like, stylistically, she had already been influenced. And I think it makes a lot of sense because the production is sparse, but, like, in a great way. And I don't agree with Hugh Padgham's, him saying that it's like too much production or like too much going on, because I really like the songs that he engineered, Leave It Open, Get Out of My House. I like the fact that there's a lot going on and I think that it's balanced, but Ne t'enfuis pas is very different in that it's very, you can tell like how many instruments there are and it's a little bit more simplistic and that's a good thing, you know, a little bit of less is more compared to like the maximalist approach that she maybe had in the dreaming. You can see that she's kind of sussing it out a little bit in preparation for Hounds of Love, which had a little bit of that, like Hounds of Love, the title track, you know, it has a very set amount of instruments compared to the dreaming that has like a lot more going on generally.
Yeah, that is very true. This is very, it not only is it sparse and she's like using every instrument kind of to its maximum, But also her voice is deeper too. Like you can feel, you can hear where she starts to go with Hounds of Love.
Yes. Yeah. And like, that's a very common thing I hear with people, you know, like first time listeners, like a lot of people recommend her first album, or if her voice is too high, they recommend Hounds of Love because it's more mid-range and lower. So like, yeah, this is sort of like a sign of what's to come in a way.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting and rare, I think, to have those kind of tracks in between albums. Ugh, I love it.
I know. Well, and so this is a quote I found where Kate was actually talking about the production of the song. So we're talking about the production.
Perfect.
This was from Electronic Soundmaker, the October 1983 issue. And this was sent to me by Bosco Sauce, who's a listener of the podcast. He sent me a link to a website with a guy who's been scanning in old computer music magazines. And he sent me a link to an article where she was actually talking about the production, about actually, and this article was all about the Fairlight and different artists and how they've been using it at the time. And they especially highlighted her on this. And she actually talks about making Ne T'en Fuis Pas, which I thought was so rare that she was actually talking about the production of it. Because I scoured the internet webs and I could not find anything. It was like, this woman went, I released out in the ether and be like, hey, yo, I got a new song. Bah!
Yeah, I would love to read this afterwards. So
yeah, I'll send you a link to it.
Yeah.
But here's the part where she was, they were talking a little bit about the kind of the lead up to Ne T'en Fuis Pas here. For somebody who, since the age of 11, has received their musical induction on the piano, the CMI may seem an unusual choice for enhancing compositional creativity. However, Kate talks about the machine with enthusiasm and excitement, rather than foreboding, though the initial outlay was not taken lightly. Quote, when I was first going to buy the Fairlight, I was really worried because it cost so much money, about £18,000. But I haven't regretted it at all. I'm really pleased with it. It's been a great inspiration to me. Unquote. To give some examples of the uses to which the Fairlight can be applied, Kate talked about her recent single En Français, Ne T'en Fuis Pas, a large part of which was conceived and developed on the Fairlight. Quote, we got a flute sound which we sampled into it. My brother had actually played the note and sampled it into the instrument, unquote. They were dealing here with a single note sample, though the CMI can sample several during a period of 2 seconds before the quality deteriorates. Quote, in this particular case, I was quite into the idea of it sounding out of its normal pitch. Then we used an AMS chorus on it to get the effect we wanted, and I worked out the chords. It was a lot of fun to play with. Then there were a couple of sounds we wanted in there. One was a laugh. Kate began sampling and ended up using one of her own as well as a friend's. Quote, I used it an octave down in pitch, so it sounded a bit strange. Unquote.
I don't remember hearing a laugh.
Me neither.
Whoa, that is so interesting.
Because only song of hers with a laugh that I can think of is the end of Love and Anger going into the fog. On the sensual world.
Yeah. And also, I think Lord of the Reedy River has something like that where she like samples like weird mouth or not mouth noises, but like weird like kind of noises.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, that's so weird. I am so curious. I wonder if that was taken out. Well, when did this article come out?
This came out in October 1983.
The single also came out in October 1983, correct?
Yep.
Is that in the song? That's so weird. I feel like I would have noticed.
I know. I was listening to it on loop today on my phone, and I heard nothing.
Oh, my God. Maybe it was released before, or it was taken out of it before it was released or something. Maybe they interviewed her before the song came out, and like the last minute she took it out or something.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's just like really well hidden in there. I'm gonna have to re-listen.
I know. I can't think of where it is.
It's so exciting to learn something new about one of your favorite songs. And I'm just like so overjoyed right now. Like all that information was so interesting. like Patty playing that flute note and the fact that they put chorus on it and the mysterious laugh. Oh my God. I'm going to be listening to this nonstop.
I'm going to be, I've already listened to it on a loop today. I'm like, I do not mind at all.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's so cool. I actually have a Fairlight virtual synthesizer thing.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask you if you've ever really played around with that kind of stuff, because you make music as well.
I do. And I got this Fairlight VST, and it's been so cool playing around with it, like the sampling and everything. And there was a really good article, I believe, on Reverb.com that walks people through. It walks you through basically how Kate did a lot of these sounds on different, like the Fairlight and the CS80, you know, synthesizer. And it was so interesting to kind of go through how these samples were affected and altered, because you really could just stick a flute and play it like that. But when you listen to stuff like Running Up That Hill, you hear these samples that have been affected in these really crazy ways, you know, pitch bent or chorus or reverb. Mm-hmm. And it gives a lot of insight into how she's making these sounds that I thought were just synth patches that are actually different samples.
It's just that the whole thing with the Fairlight and the Fairlight computer musical instrument in it, she was doing stuff like with the sampling of this flute sound for the song. Like, that kind of stuff is so easy to do now. I do that kind of stuff all the time in my own music too. Like, I'll take a sound, like, I remember one time banging my shoes on the stairs to make drum sounds and turning that into a song. Or I'll take my voice memo app on my phone and record. Oh God, there was one time some workers were working outside in downtown Norfolk here, like right across the river from where I live. And it was these guys, they were working on something and they had these big metal tubs. And I heard some banging on it as I was coming out of the nearby library and went, oh, I need to record on my voice memo. Yay! And I turned that sound into, I used that sound in one of my songs.
That is so funny, because I did the same exact thing.
Really?
They were replacing windows in my office building. So out on the street, there were guys smashing these glass windows, and I recorded it on my voice memo phone app thing, because I want to stick it in the Fairlight, you know, a la Kate, and sample it. That's so funny. But it is so easy. Like, I can literally open up Ableton right now, you know, sing a note into my headphones and sample that. And back then, they really had to, like, mic up these things and put it on a floppy disk, and I'm sure like load it up, and I'm sure it was just like so much more of a hassle, and so, you know, you really needed all this equipment to do just that. And it's crazy to think about, you know, these strides that have been made in technology and music production, and especially, you know, how innovative she was using the Fairlight as well. So
yeah, at about the same time, actually, Depeche Mode were getting more into sampling for their album Construction Time Again. A lot of songs on that album were made by them going, okay, we're going to go out to this junkyard out in the really seedy part of town and just record ourselves banging on random things and turn that into songs. And they did for a lot of the songs on Construction Time Again.
That's amazing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
kind of about that was released like 1982, 83. So at about the same time.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. Yeah. And Fleetwood Mac, Tango in the Night, and Lindsey Buckingham's solo album prior, Go Insane, are very Fairlight heavy. Like, the samples are very clear, and you can hear him like playing with all these different like percussive samples and also recording his own voice and sort of playing it as like a synth line. And that was released around the same frame of time, more mid-80s, I think, closer to Hounds of Love than maybe The Dreaming. But yeah, super, super great tool in music.
Seriously.
Yeah, just amazing. I think I probably mentioned this in a previous episode, but I have a Fairlight CMI fridge magnet on my fridge.
Ooh, cool.
I love it so much that I have it on my fridge.
Well, it changed a lot of things. Oh my goodness. And especially on this song, she uses the Fairlight to a really, really good effect.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That is so crazy though. Like knowing exactly how she got that sound is just mind blowing.
I know. Thank you, Bosco Sauce, for sending that along. I would not have found. I had scoured the internet looking for stuff about this song, and oh my goodness, he sent it. Yay.
Yes. Thank you, Bosco Sauce.
Seriously.
yeah. Just amazing. Amazing production.
This is just such a beautiful song. Oh my God. It just, the music is so haunting. I love that the lyrics are so ambiguous. You could just put your own spin on it. Her use of color, her the way her voice sounds. And of course, you know, you sing anything in French, I'm going to like it. I'm the biggest Francophile you ever meet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kate speaking in French, what a treat, right?
And an interesting little artifact from a weird like time in her career when they wanted to break her in French Canada for some reason.
Yeah, and probably just like to her, a sort of throwaway quick song that she made fairly quickly, I'm guessing. You know, I cannot imagine that there was a lot of importance to her, or she placed a lot of importance on this song. I don't know, maybe it's one of her favorite songs. I could be totally assuming that this is a throwaway to her. But just guessing, like, kind of the nature in which it was written, that's how I can imagine it. But it's so beautiful.
I know.
And so strange, you know, sort of just wonderful. One of my favorites.
Definitely. Number three right here. Number three.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like number one, because it's just like everything I want in that one song. Although it changes, you know, from day to day. I think Get Out of My House has been my number one Kate Bush song for a bit. But this one has a really special place in my heart because of how weird it is, sort of in the canon of her music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so different. You don't get her singing in a foreign language other than Un Baiser d'Enfant and Nana Aaron.
Yeah, and a little bit in Hello Earth and Coffee Homeground German.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like two lines and they're spoken, you know, mm-hmm. very minimal other language. But yeah, this is, you know, a very rare song for that reason, that it's only in French and no English version has been recorded, unlike The Infant Kiss.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's great.
I know. I love it. I can't think of anything. I think we've pretty much covered everything. I'm looking at the notes. Well, let's see. Any final thoughts on this rather mysterious song?
I feel like I probably said everything I wanted to say. I've said a lot about this song. And I'm guessing whoever is listening can probably tell that I like it a lot.
Yeah, we got two fangirls right here.
Yeah, we're both fangirling really hard.
Yeah. This thing's been going for over an hour.
Oh my God, yeah. We've covered a lot of ground, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm good if you're good.
Yep, I'm good too. Yay.
All right, awesome.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today to talk about Ne T'en Fuis Pas.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me for this song.
Of course. Je t'en prie. Ne T'en Fuis Pas. Although we will have to because we have to end this episode.
Merci.
Oui, je t'en prie. And I'll just end the recording right there.
All right.
If you have a favorite Kate Bush song that you would like to talk about for a future episode, or if you know something about this week's song that we didn't get to, you can email me, kbcast@linkmedia.com. You can find me on the web at kbcast.linkmedia.com. You can find me on Twitter at StrangeKateCast, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast. And that is it for the dreaming. I have really enjoyed going through all of these songs with everybody and talking about them and sharing them out. Strange Phenomena now has a Patreon page, so if you would like to support the show and get exclusive content, you can go to patreon.com/KateBushPodcast. See everybody next time. I actually have been playing around with the chords for Ne t'en fuis pas and like playing my own version of it. It sounds really pretty on just the chords.
Yeah. You know, I have a PDF of the Kate Bush Complete book. Mm-hmm. And I found the lyrics through that and I was trying to learn it. Oh, I literally have the PDF on my desktop. Like, I wish I could, like, pull it out and show you.
See, I would love to just turn this into a PDF because, honestly, like, it's kind of, like, keeping it open. It's like, keep open. Ah, stop yeah. closing. Ah, keep
I
open.
Was the opposite. I actually printed out, like, half of it. Or I printed out every song that I wanted to learn so I could, like, have it on the piano and, you know. Mm-hmm. But that was my old apartment, my ex's piano. Now it's better to have it on the computer because I just do it through a MIDI controller.
Yeah.
but yeah, the chords are really pretty. And it is sort of, you know, has this melancholy quality, but is still a love song and still has that hopeful quality to it as well, in the choruses at least.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.